You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
I'm Caroline Hine.
And I'm Ed Ludlow. Both of us in San Francisco, the final time this week. Busy Friday. This is Bloomberg Technology. The markets risk on Friday, but headlines flying left, right and centre.
And I tell you, there's one asset class that is not risk on today too. We'll dig into all of that first. Coming up, Amazon puts construction of its second headquarters on hold following its biggest ever job cuts.
And Apple's executive exodus continues. This time, it's the person in charge of iCloud, iMessage and FaceTime.
And Silvergate's struggle for survival. It's weighing on overall crypto sentiment.
Bloomberg breaking the story that construction's being paused, Caro, in Virginia on HQ2, that second phase of construction, the 322-story tower, is really interesting.
Let's get into the detail. The person who broke the story, one Matt Day, is with us. And just talk to us, Matt, about the importance of this second phase of the construction, because it's actually the bigger part of the construction, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're just now wrapping up the construction of two 22-story towers. That's the first phase. It's basically done. Amazon moves their 8,000 workers in the area into those facilities this spring and summer. What's at issue here is a much larger three 22-story towers. It's the part of the complex that's going to have the helix, the sort of spiral poop emoji-shaped building that's going to have a bunch of plants in it, big conference center, the centerpiece architecturally of the campus that Amazon hopes to build. All that's on pause right now. No digging for the foreseeable future.
Hey, Matt, I know that last April this was approved and sources were telling us that Amazon was ready to pull the trigger. They held off. They then considered getting shovels in the ground to start the year. What did Amazon tell you about this decision, why they decided to hit the brakes?
So they said some of the obvious things you'd think, you know, like, listen, we're not sure what kind of hiring we're going to be doing in the next couple of years. They've had a hiring freeze on since late last year. We don't know when that lifts. And there's also just a different vibe around Amazon today than there was when they announced this campus in the first place. You know, back then they were growing by leaps and bounds. They'd run out of space in Seattle. They were searching for really anywhere to put people all across the country. So 25,000 was not so ambitious a target then. It looks a lot more ambitious today.
Just looking at pictures of that poop emoji, as you called it. I thought it was a helix. I hadn't heard it called that.
Officially, Matt, yeah.
Matt, talk to us, though, about, you know, the serious nature of this is that Arlington, Virginia is going to be worried. In particular, they think of the tax breaks, what, $800 million worth given to Amazon to lure them to bring in, what, 25,000 workers?
That's right, but the good news for Arlington anyway is they haven't handed anything over yet. You know, some of the tax breaks related to hotel occupancy fees that would get sent Amazon's way, but a lot of them are just job related. Like once they started putting butts in seats and they hit certain targets, you know, then they'd get tax breaks on the payroll taxes there. So that money hasn't started changing hands yet. So that's the good news for Arlington is if Amazon says they're committed to it, they still think that they're getting a pretty good deal when and if Amazon does complete the campus as they planned.
Bloomberg's Matt Day reporting out of Seattle. Good stuff. Thank you so much. Let's branch out a little bit and talk about tech more broadly. Denny Fish, portfolio manager at Janus Henderson, managing $4 billion across funds in the tech space, leading technology research. It's interesting, Denny. I won't put you on the spot when it comes to Amazon specifically. I know you hold that stock in your funds. But as an example, Amazon kind of hitting the brakes on the real estate side, having already worked on the layoff side. What is that telling you about the technology sector right now, the prudence that it's kind of going through?
Well, it's definitely different than it was 12 months ago in terms of the general philosophy for the backdrop, both in terms of, in Amazon's case specifically, it's a company that overhired during the pandemic, put a lot of capital to work in logistics and fulfillment. You know, we're just talking about, you know, the headquarters being put on pause. And the challenge for Amazon is, you know, twofold. You have this highly profitable growth business, Amazon Web Services, that's starting to slow. But more importantly for them, they're really a physical business with a digital front end. And as a result, there's only one way to get out of that situation when you overinvest. And you either have to significantly reduce your footprint, which is really hard for them to do because of the nature of what fulfillment and logistics represents. So they have to grow out of it, and they have to get efficiencies on a unit profitability basis. And that's what the company is grinding through right now. And then when you exacerbate that with a tough economic environment, it just makes it that much harder and that much longer to recoup and start to actually drive some leverage out of those investments that they've made.
The other story of the week has been earnings, and I think about names like Dell and then contrast that with Broadcom, and we're getting kind of really mixed signals about demand from corporate America, global corporates, and the consumer. Kind of what's your tea leaves read of this week and what we're seeing from tech?
Yeah, well, I would say broadly the entire earnings season, if we wanted to unpack that, and this was just a continuation of that, and that is that if we look across sectors, you know, semiconductors are always the leading indicators for global economic growth or global economic slowdowns. And we've seen a material slowdown there. Most companies lowering expectations pretty materially for the year. But nonetheless, the stocks have actually been responding all right, which is really encouraging because semiconductors are the first ones to actually start to discount the upturn as well. And they're incredible businesses with great industry structure. But nonetheless, that's where we're at, and they're highly economically sensitive. And then you have kind of the secular growth stories in software and internet and other sectors where things are still growing. But they're just not growing nearly as fast as the economy starts to take hold, as well as there was just so much capital that came into the space over, you know, a 5 to 7 year period. And the market's really starting to discern now within these names on the unit economics and, you know, companies that have, you know, really good, strong, durable competitive positions, really durable unit economics. And those are the companies that are likely to perform as we get to the other side of this, you know, economic situation that we're in right now.
And strong balance sheets. And I just want to bring this particular point that was really driven home by GSAM a little bit earlier. Just take a listen, Danny.
Tech is getting grouped in with growth, quote unquote, if you will, but there's a lot of quality. There's good balance sheet. There's a lot of cash. There's the ability to still do M&A and strong activities. And so, again, we're really focused on there are some strong, solid micro stories, and it's less, hey, let's buy the index.
Are people sort of throwing babies out with bathwaters, to use that awful phrase, but ultimately people tying everything up
some
with
pretty
growth?
Big babies in there if you're throwing those out,
Or have we now discerned that Microsoft, which I think is your largest holding, some other companies are of a different beast and actually perhaps don't see them as growth stocks in the way that you used to?
Well, I think it's twofold. There are a couple of dynamics that are going on. If we just think about what I call the gigacaps, okay, so kind of think about Fang Ma, you know, broadly speaking, we have started to see a lot more discernment in terms of the multiples. We've seen where, you know, Google's traded much lower in terms of its, you know, expected earnings multiple. Microsoft and Apple have continued to hold their multiples, I think just given the confidence in those business models over the longer term. And all of these companies are getting a lot more competitive with each other. You know, if we just think about the idea of AI and what we've seen with OpenAI and ChatGPT and the potential implications to Google search business, but that's all upside for Microsoft. And so the market's trying to figure out what this is going to mean over the longer term. And then, yeah, I would say 2022, we just kind of threw everything out, you know, with the bathwater. And then early this year, we've had this risk-on rally, not, you know, the last, you know, week and a half or so, which has been a little choppier, but coming into this year now, like, it's one of those classic early cycle potential rallies. I don't know if it's a bear market rally. Yeah. I don't know if it's an early cycle rally, but it feels more like an early cycle rally because everything then rises. And then what usually happens is you get 6 or 9 months down the road, it's the companies that have have the real financial performance that really start shining through. And that's where you start to generate your returns over a multi-year basis in tech.
Okay, you mentioned ChatGPT.
Yep.
And one of the key mega caps that has outperformed so far this year is NVIDIA. I know it's a holding of yours. Are you making bets now on who is best placed in the artificial intelligence race right now?
Yeah, we are. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, you know, NVIDIA is an obvious one for the moment, because the fact of the matter is you can't deploy GPT without a ton of GPUs, right? I mean, it's just like that's what it is. And now, is that going to persist? You know, there's still the opportunity for companies to develop application-specific processors that might be more efficient for certain types of models, so that's a risk. One of the most amazing parts of NVIDIA's growth story over many years has been CUDA, its software platform for developers that makes it easier to program against GPUs and sort of has allowed it to win the race. Is that going to be a competitive advantage in a world of generative AI and large language models? We're not quite sure on that. But for now, there's probably no cleaner play than NVIDIA. But as you start thinking across the ecosystem, you know, it's interesting. We just mentioned Microsoft, for example.
Yeah.
Anything they do with Bing is all upside. You know, and could they potentially displace Google as the default on iOS?
Could they?
What do you think?
They potentially could. It's clearly in their ambition. And all things equal, if you're Apple, you just want to provide a consistent user experience, and you want to extract as much economic value as you can.
GPT, GPU, I'll hit you in another acronym that Kara and I have been hearing every day, FOMO.
Yep.
That was clumsy by me. Mm-hmm. Is what we're seeing in the market broadly FOMO? You know, C3 AI is a name. It's up another 30% today.
Yeah.
Based on fundamentals? I think not.
No, it's not. And so FOMO is driving. So when I talked about that classic, so we have two things. We've kind of had that classic early cycle behavior in terms of the market. And then we also have, you know, the thematic artificial intelligence kind of, you know, investing environment that institution and retail investors get behind. And it's easy to kind of throw some capital at some names like that. But and so the reality is, like, that is a lot of FOMO, right? Because the fundamentals haven't changed that much. There aren't a lot of pure ways to actually play artificial intelligence. And it's really going to be more of what can actually enhance the value of an existing business. You know, where companies are well positioned on the infrastructure side to, you know, benefit from, you know, the massive build outs that we're going to actually have to see to support this. But we're also going to see a ton of speculation around the edges and sort of maybe some of the less proven, but, you know, a company that has AI in its, you know,
name.
Exactly.
Well, let's go from AI to VR, because Ed was helping break great scoops on Meta today, and ultimately this company is having to cut prices of its pretty expensive virtual reality headsets. That still there's a lot of hope, a lot of hype, but perhaps not the purchasing that many had anticipated. But you've been adding to your Meta position.
Yes.
What was on the back of that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's not because of AR, VR, to be clear.
Okay. It's not the metaverse.
It's not the metaverse. You know, the metaverse is like, it's this thing we've been talking about for many, many years, and it's going to evolve more slowly, right? Because you're going to have a bunch of different metaverses, consumer, enterprise, different use cases. What's interesting about Meta, one is the stock got too darn cheap. Okay. The expectation was, you know, they had to do something to repair their stock price and get aggressive with their cost structure. And they did. So that was part of the thesis. But there's another part of the thesis, too. And that is about 18 months ago, Apple effectively exercised its market power. And you had two things. You had IDFA.
You mean iOS ad tracking.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Or reduced ad tracking, right? With IDFA and ATT. And
acronym central today,
are we? there are two more. And that really hurt Meta. It really inhibited their ability to drive return on ad spend because they lost the ability to retarget and measure consumers across the broader internet. Now, What's interesting is they are one of the largest buyers of GPUs right now on the planet. They're re-architecting their data centers. The reason they're doing it is they're all in on AI to drive better ad measurement. To the extent they're able to do that, they might actually widen their competitive advantage over time. And it's kind of like a not quite as obvious way to think about a company that could benefit from AI, given how bad it's been hurt by Apple so far.
Data.
Love that. Yeah. Love that thesis. Come back, Denny. It's been a joy to actually be here, sat next to you while in San Francisco. But hope you come back into the office. We thank you for making the special trip to Sydney. Janice Henderson, portfolio manager, Denny Fish. Coming up, another key Apple executive just talking about that company. Well, they're leaving the company. We'll discuss why. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said. Done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
The executive in charge of Apple's iCloud, iMessage and FaceTime infrastructure is leaving the company, according to sources. After 5 years in the role, Michael Abbott is stepping down as the company's cloud chief next month. It adds to the revolving door of executives at the company. Bloomberg senior technology editor Nick Turner is here with us. The revolving door, I think that's part of the story, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily that uncommon around the end of the year for a certain number of Apple executives to leave. It feels like more than normal this year, especially between now and like the sort of the last few months of the year. You've had a lot of sort of VP level people in charge of everything from kind of industrial design to the chief privacy officer to the head of the website, depart recently.
Right.
So.
April is the time that he's going to be particularly leaving Michael Abbott, and that's in large part because of when your shares vest.
Right.
I'm interested, though, on whether they're filling these roles that swiftly.
In some cases, and in this case, they are having someone take over his duties, which is Jeff Robin, who's the guy who invented iTunes. So that's not a bad, you know.
Flex claim. Nice.
You know. So in some other cases, they're basically divvying up duties and giving them to other people. There's not really going to be a chief privacy officer the way there was before. For instance, the industrial design person, they essentially are giving those duties to different people, which is a pretty big deal because that used to be Johnny Ive and, you know, the heart of Apple.
Well, real quick, we've only got about 30 seconds, but the serious thing is that services is important, right?
Well, so everything cloud related, that's been huge for them. I think there's been a bit of tension over the years in terms of how much they rely on like Amazon and Google to do cloud versus doing it themselves. And so maybe that's something the new person will have to sort of sort out too, but they do basically a mix at the moment.
Nick, fascinating. Great story coming from Mark Gurman and Nick Turner, key team players. We thank you so much for coming on and explaining it all.
Time now for Talking Tech. Let's start with AI. Artificial intelligence startup Inflection AI seeking to raise as much as $675 million. That, according to the Financial Times, citing sources. That's the company, Caro, founded by Mustafa Suleiman, one of DeepMind's founders, as well as LinkedIn creator Reid Hoffman. Speaking of which, Reid Hoffman has announced he'll step back from the OpenAI board and citing greater transparency because Greylock, his firm, is increasingly investing in companies using OpenAI's APIs. Hoffman says this could cause a conflict of interest. He's been a personal investor through his charities and on the board of OpenAI since 2015. And finally, don't miss this one. Gwyneth Paltrow, Kinship Ventures, raising $75 million for its debut fund, Axios reporting, without citing where it got the information. Axios says the firm is looking to invest in early stage consumer goods and technology companies. Very on brand for one, yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow, Caroline.
And interesting that she's doing it in line with Moj Marjara, we understand,
right,
as well. Now, Moj was coming from BeautyCon and really focusing on the beauty side of investment, but also luckily having interacted plenty with Moj in the previous times through women's networks. I know how focused she is on ensuring that women, that diverse leadership, and indeed people get a seat at the cap table, are able to invest in fast-growing companies.
Right.
So this is an interesting area that, of course, herself, Gwyneth Paltrow, a business lady, Goop, no less, getting into VC.
And also she moved on from acting to be an entrepreneur. And I think the idea is very much like, I've got some money to play with here to support entrepreneurs that I see myself. I'm, you know, a venture capitalist finding like-minded people or similarly experienced people. Speaking of venture capital, I think we've got to go back to Reid Hoffman. This is really interesting. The basics are we are investing in all sorts of AI-related startups. Those AI-related startups are using GPT-3.5. I can't be on the board anymore. That is a big piece of industry news, given everything that's happened so far this year.
Yeah, I really think that we've been interviewing the likes of Neva, for example,
exactly,
which in some ways is a competitor to the likes of OpenAI by not only having a search engine that's built around these sort of large language models, but also being able to cite where the information is coming from. We've interviewed that CEO before, and that does have relationships with certain VCs such as Greylock. So I think this is an interesting area that there's going to be a lot of investment being thrown into the AI space, and some will be competitors and some will be able to grow in tandem.
Well, very quick, we had Som Motamedi, his colleague, on the show just a couple of weeks ago, right? And he makes the point, I'm looking at enterprise companies, how they can take existing tools because AI will improve every single company, I think is what he said. So this makes sense based on the activity that we're seeing out there.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde.
And I'm Ed Ludlow. Both of us in San Francisco for the final time this week, I'm sad to say. Now, let's get to crypto markets. They're struggling to power through, frankly, the implosion of Silvergate Capital, the bank, one of the main banking providers for the crypto industry, which is why we're seeing sentiment drop in other crypto-related assets. Bitcoin hitting a two-week low. For more, let's bring in Bloomberg's Yuqi Yang. Yuqi, so many headlines on the Bloomberg this Friday. What is the latest with Silvergate?
So we're really still seeing the ripple effect from the collapse of FTX last November. As we know, FTX is a major client of Silvergate, and Silvergate, as a result, suffered from a bank run last year. But then this week, the bank said that they couldn't really file their annual filings on time. They said that they disclosed more losses for selling securities, and then they said they're evaluating if they can stay afloat internally, and they also indicated risk of being investigated by the Department of Justice. So all of this really prompted an exodus of all the key partners of users on the Silvergate platform, which is one of the few and key payments platform for crypto companies to transfer US dollar between each other real time.
Coinbase, Galaxy Digital, Paxos Trust, all of these saying, look, our ties with Silvergate are being put on hold for the time being. Where then do we go for these sorts of ability to transfer, to be able to ensure that the pipes are still working, the infrastructure is still there?
That is the question that the industry players are trying to figure out. Another bank that's in this space is Signature Bank, but they already announced that they're actually planning to reduce the deposits from crypto companies. And so there's not many options right now for crypto players to find a bank that's willing to take them out on and replace the role of surrogate.
Yuqi, more of a PSA for our audience, but some of the ratings agencies catching up, ratings cut by Moody's at Silvergate, not so sure that's a surprise. Where do we go from here? You know, Caroline and I were talking actually earlier on a Twitter Spaces about how we were talking at the end of last year, the beginning of this year, that Silvergate was in trouble. Why do they keep falling further and further?
So we're seeing regulatory pressure from the DC, as we know that after the bankruptcy of FTX, federal banking regulators all came out with warnings talking about the risk of serving crypto companies for banks. And they're really trying to make sure that any contagion risk from the industry will not leak into the real world economy. So Silvergate is one part of that. We're seeing that the bank is now trying to figure out a solution about their past. Going forward, deposits from crypto companies were the majority of their depositor base, and they're really unique in the sense that they're getting hit pretty hard because their depositors are fleeing the bank essentially.
Oh, the problems of centralized finance within the world of decentralized finance. Yuqi Yang, we thank you so much in New York for staying late. We appreciate it. Go have a wonderful weekend. Let's dig more into this, though. We've got a perfect voice, Anastasia Bez, COO of Kadena. It's a scalable proof-of-work blockchain that actually spun off from JP Morgan's private project. And Anastasia, infrastructure's at your heart, basically, in terms of some of what you're trying to build at Kadena and support within the ecosystem. But just first and foremost, take us to the interplay of centralized finance and traditional finance trying to interweave itself with decentralized finance. How much are people worried about some of the contagion risks within Signature Bank and indeed what, not Signature, apologies, but Silvergate, and what it ultimately means for the growth in the ecosystem?
Hi, thanks. I think that one of the big things is that we still have to interact with centralized banking, especially, you know, companies that are based in the U.S. So if you want to have these U.S. companies, we need to have access to bank accounts and be able to do payroll and healthcare and things like that. So it's one of those realities that in a decentralized world, we still have to be able to play and integrate with, you know, banks. So I don't know quite where it's going, but it needs to be something that happens. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to have companies in the way that functions.
As a case in point, Anastasia, you know, we are talking about Silvergate, a lender, an almost traditional lender, but lending to the crypto industry. As someone participating in that space, this is what we ask our audience, okay, whether this is kind of it, the worst has happened, or if there's more to come. How do you go about running a business as COO? We asked, is the contagion spillover contained? 70% of respondents said no. Are you kind of worried about the health of this industry right now?
It's so hard to tell because I think that there keeps being moments where people say this is it and then there's something new that comes out. So I think that there's sort of been a continuing ripple effect. But I think also, I mean, I'm at ETH Denver right now and there's a lot of optimism about the technology and what people are building and sort of tech infrastructure. And I'm seeing a lot of, you know, collaboration and cooperation between, you know, interchain projects where people are seeing the strength of one project and how that can work with another. And so as much as there's sort of these very real concerns, I also think that people are still innovating and building things that are pretty exciting. But, you know, I mean, we want to do it successfully. We want to build things that are resilient. And that means being resilient in the business world, not just in the tech world.
Okay, so Anastasia, let's talk about what you're building. It's, you know, a proof of work blockchain, some would say equivalent to a Bitcoin, but it's scalable. It's fast is the idea in particular. What are you hoping that Kadena can solve within the infrastructure needs?
So one of the things is we are fast, but also secure because we have a structure that has graded chains so that it refers to other parts of the chain. But really what we're trying to offer is for businesses to be able to build on top of us and be able to take that security and also the scalability without having to worry about, you know, as many of the security risks. And, you know, we also have a smart contract language. So that's the programming language that people write different blockchain applications in called Pact, and that has a lot of safety features to it. So that's something that we see being more accessible and easier for people to use as developers because of the way that it's structured, which hopefully means that people can build more viable businesses because you'll be able to, it's human readable. So I can read one of the contracts and see what it says. You know, as a non-engineer, that's really valuable to be able to understand what's happening, even though, you know, you want to get to a world where you don't have to look under the hood and you can trust what's happening.
Well said. I mean, Cardano, as I sort of said at the beginning, was spun out of a private blockchain project being built within JP Morgan, the founders helping exercise really that first blockchain at JP Morgan. And therefore, I ask you, what is traditional companies' appetite to continue to invest or to adopt within overall crypto space, whether it be building their own private blockchain, so they'd be trying to harness the power of the technology, while at the same side, they've got this worry about ultimately how much bad press the ecosystem gets?
I think that companies are trying to balance that, where there is some real innovation or people have this appetite for new things that might solve problems, but that they are trying to balance that with, you know, being a little bit more conservative at large companies. And that's, you know, it's a balance that they have to strike, but there is still interest. There's definitely still companies that are doing partnerships and, you know, finding different ways to build in the space, you know, in ways that I think are very real, whether that's, you know, it's just a variety of different things. But I think that some of it, where it's going to go, is not partnerships that you understand, like that are visible, but just under the hood, there's a blockchain technology doing something.
I want to dig into blockchain technology. I know this is an area you care deeply about, and tech literacy. So Caroline and I have been talking a lot about artificial intelligence. We've been experimenting with it, using it. You see everyone having a go. And I feel like with the crypto hysteria, hype, whatever you want to call it, of the last 2 years, a lot of people miss the basics. Would you say that that's fair?
I think that there's a huge need for education and a huge opportunity for education still in the crypto space, where there's a lot to learn. And right now, I mean, I use this example, but I've talked to my mom about how she wants to do things in crypto, and it just becomes this huge bureaucratic onboarding experience. And so I definitely agree that more education should happen and is happening. But I see more and more people understanding some of these things around, for example, self-custody and what that means, whether you have tokens on an exchange or you have custody of them yourself. I mean, that's like a really important education point.
Here's to mums wanting to get into crypto, Anastasia. Thanks so much, Anastasia Bez, COO of Cardano. And thank you so much for your time. Keep enjoying ETH Denver. Meanwhile, let's turn to the VC world now and some of that hype around AI. I caught up with Aldalou Dennis, general partner over Initialized Capital, and Avanta Akarchi, COO of A-Frame Brands, as part of Bloomberg's International Women's Day event. I asked them how they cut through some of the noise, the hype, some of the worries as well. Take a listen.
I think the answer is to actually have more diversity on your investing team, because there's a certain attraction that some people who are more interested in certain sectors, more interested in the hot, shiny object, will be attracted to. And meanwhile, they may ignore a very large sector such as family tech, for example.
Yes.
That is a huge market that impacts, billions and billions of lives that has as much potential. And so for me personally, spending time on an industry like crypto or ChatGPT, there's plenty, or AI. I mean, there's plenty of investors who are going to follow that. And I think the value is had in finding large markets that are underserved.
Yeah, which I think also, sorry to interrupt, is also going back to even like the old tech adages of problem solution. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to actually solve problems for people as opposed to kind of getting caught up in the hype.
What about some of the ethics around that,
yes,
particularly when it comes to bias? Mm-hmm. And how are you thinking about?
Oh, I'm frightened. Yes, because AI is only as good as what you put into it, and humans have bias, and so bias is going to be rolled into it. And actually, often when I talk about bias when in building structures and orgs, I say bias is like gravity. It's something that you can't see. It's like it just exists, and you have to figure out how, if you want to be able to fly, you want to defy gravity. You need to build a whole bunch of things. You need to build a plane that is intentional towards being able to do that.
Attention.
And so if you want to be able to try and remove bias from things, you have to build a whole bunch of stuff and be intentional on drawing that out. And I think especially as hype is building, people are not being as not slowing down to be as intentional about it, which is worrisome.
Aldo Lou Dennis, general partner at Initialize Capital, and Avanta Arachchi, their COO of A-Frames Brands. And Ed, the reason Avanta's point of view is so important when it comes to bias, when it comes to building new businesses, is she is a proud trans woman of color.
Right.
And she was very happy to go there to this vulnerable space with us of what it was like being a man in the room to then being a woman in the room when trying to discuss the building of businesses. She now is all about trying to create new brands that serve a diverse population, to have that bias stripped out from the very beginning. If anyone is going to be attuned to what AI, she also helps build virtual worlds, for example, in the world of fashion, she's going to be attuned to what some of the ethics that we need in place ahead of it.
What I took from that is why the Bloomberg New Voices initiative is so important, is to bring the people that are actually having the conversation into the room together.
Yeah.
But two really core tenets of venture capital and founders: what is a problem that we're trying to solve and what's the technological solution? And then how do you build a company? And they just cut through the noise, as you said, AI, crypto. No, actually, it's a problem, solution, make a company to solve it. I think that's terrific.
And Alda's, I mean, background is phenomenal, having been GC over at the Founders Fund, but then has gone on to, you know, work on, she's written personal checks to SpaceX.
Yes.
She's had real success in some of the companies that she's built and invested in. Within, we've got to remember, Initialized, 80% led by women. The New Voices scheme, so loud and proud about it here at Bloomberg. If you want to get media trained, come in and understand a little bit more about
it. And if you know someone out there in the industry, come to us, tell us about them, and then we will talk to them. Now, coming up, a new TikTok trend about the rising costs of dating, racking up millions of views. That's next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Democrat Representative Ro Khanna has represented Silicon Valley since 2017. Now he's working to broaden the U.S. technology focus of San Francisco. Khanna was a key player in the passage of the CHIPS Act to jumpstart semiconductor production in the United States. Now he has a $2 trillion pitch to revitalize U.S. manufacturing in what he calls economic patriotism. Here's how he's framing it.
A new economic patriotism simply means that the private sector can work with universities, community colleges, labor, the government, to have a common purpose of investing in America's production capability. What I think we need to do is look at regions that have been decimated, deindustrialized, say, what are their assets? How can we have a moonshot there? How can we have place-based policy for economic revitalization?
What's some of like your proudest accomplishments so far?
Well, certainly the CHIPS and Science Act that I helped draft led to two Intel factories coming to Ohio, led to Micron being in upstate New York with almost $100 billion investment.
I believe for us to have the next generation of manufacturing, we need new technology. We need immigrants. We need a educated workforce. We need the skilled trades and vocational education, and we need government financing. And this can be a common national purpose, the economic revitalization of the country. I've said we need a CHIPS Act every year for many different industries. This can't be a one-off. Now both parties recognize that the gutting of factory towns was a huge mistake. The offshoring of production was a huge mistake. The economic disparity is polarizing America. I've called for a $2 trillion investment over 10 years. The CHIPS Act was about $50 billion. We need to have the same urgency, the same scale to build this production base. It is a difficult argument to convince people on the spending. I have not gotten people to buy into the $2 trillion investment. I did the bill with Marco Rubio. He's good with $20 billion investment, which is a start. But I will continue to make it that we have to go big and bold on this.
Great report coming from our colleague Kayla Shea there. And it is notable that we're trying to see this focus in California of, yes, technology has been the heartbeat,
mainstay,
the epicenter.
Yeah.
Particularly from a revenue perspective when you're thinking about taxes, but they have to diversify. And you think about California, I also think of the ports. I also think of infrastructure. I also think of rebuilding. And I think of a global supply chain that's up in arms.
It's a really good point. How much time have I spent down at the Port of Los Angeles in the last 2 years? But, you know, when I talk to founders and I talk to VCs, whatever, they kind of want to protect the brain trust coming out of the universities here. Mm. There's also a societal discussion around living in San Francisco, the Bay Area, how difficult it can be. But the conclusion they will come to is we need to invest a bit more money. Mm. Money talks, doesn't it? All right, let's pivot to a new trend gaining traction. Guess where? TikTok. Dating sprees. It's beginning to make sense why dating apps are testing those premium subscriptions, some of them upwards of $500 per month. TikTokers are racking up millions of views, breaking down the high cost of dating. Some went on 28 dates in 28 days to show how inflation has impacted their love life. Yes, I did say that. One event went on 28 blind dates to raise money for charity. Now, here to explain, Bloomberg's Ms. Elena Ekofopoulou. Mizzy, what is this all about?
Well, Ed, if you're looking for examples about how TikTok is changing the quest for love, we have one for you. You mentioned it. One 31-year-old girl in New York City decided in the month of February to go on 28 dates in 28 days. And of course, naturally, she chronicled all of those dates on her social media platforms. She gained thousands of followers in the process. And all of them, as she was doing that, she told us in an interview at Bloomberg that they were asking the same question. How much is this costing you and who is doing the paying? Which I think is a key question for a lot of people looking for love right now.
In most cases, was it shared? Did they break it down? Did they jointly pay? What was the the come out of all of this?
Well, Caroline, I think the answer to that is it depends on who you ask. It's definitely a question that a lot of people are passionate about. Different cultures and different people have different opinions about it. But we spoke to one etiquette expert who basically said the weight of the cost should fall on whoever is doing the asking. And so if you're not able to afford a date, you're asking someone out on, then maybe think of other alternative cheaper dates that you can go to, because they really can rack up in the hundreds of dollars per the TikToks that we saw this one year, right. 31-year-old post on her profile. And so really, if you're asking someone out, Ed and Caroline, make sure you're the one paying.
And when they're doing the TikTok afterwards, they're using the bold glamour filter that therefore makes you look nothing like you actually do in real life too. So that's a key question for all of it. Bloomberg's Ms. Elena Ekofopoulou, thank you so much for joining us. Now Netflix is going viral on several fronts. Let's start with, well, the Murdoch murders. In case you missed it, this week a jury convicted Alec Murdoch, a prominent South Carolina lawyer, of murdering his wife and son back in June 2021, as he was sentenced to life in prison. Now, here's the other kind of unnerving part about all of this. Murdoch was convicted just days after a docuseries on the matter was released on Netflix. And this is where sort of art starts to reflect what's happening in the here and the now.
Yes.
For a long time, we've wondered when streaming companies would sort of get into news or real-time events.
Well,
and it is.
They are, but it's also kind of not new. And my mind goes to Tiger King, and bear with me. But remember the sort of media hype around it, and then the questions that that docuseries raised about some of the characters. Tiger King was a massive one for Netflix. You see it there on the screen.
Yeah.
And it induced follow-ons, and that's not it. They're also thinking about a really old school, old fashioned concept, live television now.
And also timing of releases. So
right.
For example, we're going to get Chris Rock. He's going to be coming with his stand-up comedy routine to Netflix exactly the week before the Academy Awards, the Oscars, which of course was so famed for the slap.
And they're doing it live. Who would have thought it?
Yeah. It's what, March 4th that it's coming?
Yeah.
A week before the Oscars next week. Meanwhile, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology.
Don't forget, a lot to recap. Incredible week, the two of us together. Check out the podcast. Apple, Spotify, iHeart, wherever you get your podcast.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.